The Guardian.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, joy for Man United. No Mr. Wayne, but they have got Robin, and that man RVP saves Sirskin down at Saints. Pain for Liverpool. The Reds lose Carroll, and it's Allardyce in Wonderland. With Championship news, yes, we de Canio at Swindon, but no West Fotheringham, you de can't. The Champions League draw. Serie A, a spellbinding night at the Santero in Spain. Did CR9 have tears in the dressing room? And if even his Ronaldo-ness is feeling down, what hope is there for the rest of us? All of that plus man versus feathered intruder and so much more in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody, and a very special Football Weekly on the cards today. Look, we've got Rob Smythe in.
Hello, James.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Lovely to see you.
You too.
All right. And also Jonathan Wilson.
All right.
Good Lord. And John Ashdown.
Hello.
Cool. It's all highlights and no, you know, filler this
all
week.
All killer, no filler.
All killer, no filler. Exactly. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Just me, really, letting the side down. Today, so many big questions. I think probably the first of them, after the events at Anfield Sunday afternoon, what's flappier, Pepe Reina or a pigeon in your living room? Well, Jonathan Wilson.
The pigeon was actually very unflappy.
What pigeon's this?
I'd had a session on The Source on Thursday and with Philippe Auclair, actually.
And what's he like, Sozzle? Does he just get more and more French?
Yeah, pretty All much, right. If you can imagine such a thing.
Yeah.
But very good company, as you know. So I get in and there's a pigeon on the bench in the kitchen because I've left the balcony doors open because it was so hot.
The balcony doors?
Yes.
The veranda?
If you will.
Yeah.
So my initial reaction is, oh God, I'm drunk and I'm imagining pigeons. So I turned around, went out and came back in, but it was still there. A beautiful white feathered thing, as pigeons obviously are feathered, but it's white. I mean, totally white.
Was it a dove, Jonathan?
Well, I think I don't really know what the definition is, but where
is the line between dove and
pigeon? My impression is doves are a little bit smaller, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, right. I think you might be right there. Yeah.
Right.
Less plump.
So I talked to it for quite a while, trying to persuade it to exit the flat.
Right.
And it looked at me kind of with an air of kind of, I'm quite interested in this, but I don't really know what you're talking about.
Right.
So I went over to it with a finger outstretched, thinking kind of what would be great would be if it just hopped on my finger, I could walk over and let it flap off.
And?
It turned its back on me.
Oh.
But this gave me opportunity. So I seized it with a strangler's hands.
Right.
And didn't strangle it, but just sort of picked it up and it seemed quite calm and I took it to the balcony.
Right.
And I went, fly, little one, like Noah from the Ark with a dove.
Right.
And the terrifying thing was it didn't fly at first. It just dropped and I thought, oh Christ, I've broken it.
Right.
But then thankfully, it got near the bus station roof. It sort of flapped and came back and sat on the windowsill and looked at me, kind of as if to say, yeah, what's wrong?
Couldn't was this like a metaphor together? For Clint Dempsey or something? You know, windows and failing to exit and then limping out? And
it might have been, because I mean, certainly since that night, I've kept that window a lot more tightly secured.
I've
shut that window, yeah.
All right. What a terrific slice of Jonathan Wilson's life with which to begin Football Weekly today. Anyway, the original question was, which is flappier? Are we going with Pigeon or Pepe Reina, who was called out by Jacob Steinberg last week on the show as being an accident waiting to happen, and not really waiting because he keeps happening? And lo and behold, bosh!
Yeah, well, my experience over the last 4 days is that Reina is certainly flappier.
Mm.
I think persuading him to leave my kitchen will be a lot more troublesome. Because presumably he'd be happier there and feel more comfortable than he would in the goal at Anfield.
Very possibly. It's their worst. And we'll say well done to Arsenal, by the way, Gunners fans, in a little bit. First of all, Rob?
I heard in the summer, and I have no idea how true it might be or not, but that one of Rodgers' first kind of instructions or whatever to John Henry's lot was that he actually wanted to replace Reina.
Mm.
I don't know if that's true, but that he had two. One big target was Barini. And one other thing he wanted to replace was to get rid of Reina, but
right.
That didn't come about.
Well, he spent a lot of money on Barini, and one of the questions now, given the aftermath of what's largely seen as a negative transfer window, certainly Rodgers himself saying he looked like a nutter after letting Andy Carroll go without a backup.
is that whether he actually did do good business spending 15 on Joe Allen, good though Joe Allen's been, and 10 on Barini, if that's the only money he had. It's the worst start for Liverpool since 1962. How bad is the situation? Is it just early teething problems?
I think you've got to look at the games they've played. And the West Brom game, for 40 minutes, it was an even game. Liverpool playing perfectly well. Zoltan Gera suddenly hammers one in from outside the box. And that seems to induce some kind of panic. Skirtle clearly is having a problem adjusting to the new style. He's struggling to pass it out from the back. That then precipitates the Agger situation with his sending off. So, I mean, that game just degenerated into chaos, basically from one bolt from the blue from Guerra. So that game, in isolation, you would write off. And since then, they've had two tough home games, against City and against Arsenal. They should have beaten City, but for defensive errors. Arsenal were significantly better yesterday. But so, I mean, yeah, it's been a really bad start, but they've had two very tricky fixtures and one fixture that things didn't go their way and was awkward anyway.
But they've got a defence that doesn't look comfortable, a goalkeeper is looking a bit of an issue, and up front they've only got Burini and Suarez until January.
Yeah, but I mean, they're coming off the back of a season when they finished level on points with Fulham. It was their lowest points tally since the early 80s. You know, it's the tanker is going in the wrong direction, and it takes a long time for him to turn it around. I think the problem, the striker issue, he let Carroll go because he thought he was getting Dempsey in, which is a slightly strange one anyway, because Dempsey's hardly sort of an out-and-out like-for-like, if you like. And it's exacerbated by the fact that Suarez isn't, I don't think, has started the season particularly well.
Do you think they let the wrong forward go?
No, I don't think that. I think you want the players that are going to fit into your system. The fact that plan A isn't working particularly well at the moment is exacerbating the problem that now they've lost big plan B. Mm.
Rodgers inherited a squad full of players who kind of are best suited to playing direct, aggressive football. Not long ball football, but direct and aggressive. His philosophy is completely different, so it was always going to take time. I think it's quite a lot to wish in the modern age, but people just need to be quite grown up and say, look, there could be a couple of months of struggle and just accept that it's a long-term project. I mean, his philosophy is so precise, you can't expect him to work. When he went to Swansea, they were already kind of fairly used to playing that way. Here, it's not going to happen in 5 minutes. Mm. And they've got Michael Owen to come back, so, you know.
But I mean, right. I think Rob, what you say there is, you know, it's true that if it is going to work, it'll take time. But the big concern, and the thing we actually have no evidence for, is can Rodgers impose his philosophy from scratch? Now, he took over Watford when they were fourth bottom of the table, and he took them up to 13th in the Championship.
Reading did very well.
They won. I think he won two of his first 14 games, and he was sacked just before Christmas with them fourth bottom of the table. Mm. His reputation because of what he'd done at Chelsea was still sufficient that summer in 2010. Yeah, there was talks about him going to City to be in the backroom staff there, and he opted to go to Swansea. But the foundations were there. So can he work? Can he be a success when the foundations aren't there? Maybe he can. And if he is to be, we'll take time. But that's the question mark, is we don't actually know if he can.
Yeah, this is the concern is how much time will he get. There is a difference with Hodgson because his results are poor, but Liverpool fans just didn't take it to him. Clearly, the impression I get is that they like the cut of Rodgers' jib, for want of a better phrase, and hopefully they'll give him more time.
Right.
It is a pretty big project. He needs, I mean, if he was picking his ideal Liverpool team, how many players would from that squad would he have taken?
Yeah, and would Steven Gerrard be in there?
Well, I haven't seen Liverpool's game, so I'd be loath to comment, but you do worry whether he can adapt to a kind of more precise and measured style.
Yeah, I mean, and two of the goals Liverpool have conceded this season have been Gerrard losing possession. I mean, that's a very, very harsh way of looking at it, but it does suggest there's a problem there. And just, you know, intuitively, it doesn't feel that Gerrard's right for that style of play. But you've got to play him. You've got to use him because you don't have anything else.
Yeah. Remember the best period of Liverpool's season last time around was when he was out injured.
Yeah, but, I mean, they also, Lucas wasn't injured during that best period. Lucas is now injured. Mm. So, I mean, that's another problem they've had this season. I think Lucas is really important for them. But the striker issue is a huge issue. I can't believe, why not just kind of say to West Ham, look, you can have him as long as we get somebody else. We've got everything in place. We'll sign it at 10:59 if we have to.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they really just were very, very confident that Dempsey was joining.
Well, the other option is that he was told there wasn't the money. He thought if Carroll goes and we really don't have any other option, the club will be forced into it. It was an act of brinksmanship, perhaps.
Well, possibly. I mean, I think they've cut the wage bill by £450,000 a week over the transfer window. I think I read that.
Wow.
which possibly doesn't allow them to bring in something like Drogba or Michael Owen.
Mm. And would Drogba even work if he doesn't like the big man up front that you lump it up to?
No, but he's better than nobody at all.
Right.
If Suarez gets injured, they've got Barini, who's very inexperienced in the Premier League, and nothing else. I mean, because they've let Coke go as well, let Bellamy go. I mean, your three forwards have left.
How worrying is it as well, the fact that this already seems to be illustrating a fault line between Rodgers and the people at Fenway Sports Group?
I'm not sure it is, because I mean, there's the open letter this morning that John W. Henry released, which he seemed pretty supportive of Rodgers. He admitted that mistakes had been made. I think if anybody's under pressure, it might be Ian Eyre rather than Rodgers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Now, well done, Arsenal, eh? Scoring goals, not conceding any still. That's now three games and three clean sheets. Arsenal's players, stats reveal, made 32 tackles, more than any other team has made in a Premier League match this season.
Yeah, they were excellent. And there's a definite marked improvement from last year. And I guess the obvious man you can point to for that is Steve Bould, who seems to have got people like Jenkinson improving. Last season he didn't particularly like he was improving at all. And they've got Diaby back, which is very, very handy.
What was his injury issue last year?
Was it his knee? I can't remember.
He's had a series of injuries since he... I mean, Dan Smith, a Sunderland kid, ruined his ankle with a horrible tackle. It's ridiculous. I mean, he's a 19-year-old who came off the bench. I think it might even have been his home debut. He was clearly kind of keyed up, overexcited, and he lunged in horrendously in a game where Arsenal were already winning 3-0 right at the end of the season. So it was a totally stupid, reckless, pointless challenge. Diaby seems never quite to have fully recovered from it.
Right, and how about Dan Smith? Did he ever recover from it?
I'm not sure he did, actually. I think he was genuinely horrified, and he's drifted away. I don't even know where he is now.
I believe he's working in a call centre.
Is that right?
Remarkably enough, yes.
I think the other thing Arsenal are doing this season, the two wide players, so sit a lot deeper this season than they had done last season, so on Sunday, Podolski and Oxlade-Chamberlain, and they can do that because they're quick, and obviously Walcott or Jovinho coming in would equally be quick, and so you're giving them room to accelerate into. But also just makes them defensively more secure. You basically got the two banks of four, and Cazorla's good enough to play off a front man and sort of hold the ball up, as he did for the Podolski goal. Mm. And I think that goal shows exactly what Podolski is really good at, which is his vision is great, his delivery of straightforward passes like that is great, he's really quick, he finishes really well. But my worry about him is when he comes up against teams like Sunderland, who themselves play two banks of four, does he have the tight technical skill to do anything? And I think we saw at the Euros that even Jogi Löw doesn't think he does anymore.
Mm.
There was a lovely glint in Wenger's eye when he was asked about Cazorla yesterday. You haven't kind of seen that glint for years. He looks so excited, like he's found another gem. I know Cazorla wasn't unknown, but that's a heck of a signing.
Mm. James Frayne says, will this be the tightest Premier League ever? Impossible to predict where anyone outside of the top five will finish. As a Liverpool fan, I'm worried, says James Frayne. I think even the top five is pretty hard to say exactly who's going to finish where, because you see issues all over the place. Let's take, for example, Man United. A 3-2 win, a thrilling classic Red Devils comeback at the death. Mm. But my word, they look in a ropey state at the back, don't they?
Yeah, you kind of two emotions, really. One would be the obvious thrill of United pulling another victory out of nothing. But that's kind of balanced against the fact that for parts of the game, they were actually given a minor chasing by Southampton. However, I just think you can't draw too many conclusions this early in a season, particularly after a major tournament, because everyone's kind of recovering quite slowly. That's exacerbated by the fact you've got Vidic coming back after a long time out.
Yeah.
I don't think United started well at all, and they still look weak in midfield, but I wouldn't draw too many conclusions yet.
All right, Robin van Persie, since January the 1st, 2011, has scored 52 Premier League goals, only 10 fewer than Stoke City in the same period.
Wow.
Well, I know.
Could have had six yesterday, really.
Well, he could have, couldn't he?
He just seems a magnet.
There was the penalty.
Yeah, that side foot from Valencia's pass and a couple of other half chances.
Right. So in actual fact, Man United could have had quite an easy win had he been a bit more clinical in his finishing.
Yeah, but then Southampton, Lindegaard made a couple of saves and they had a few half chances as well.
All right.
What's the situation with Lindegaard and De Gea?
I thought that was really weird, the comment from Ferguson before the game saying De Gea was... I didn't see it, but apparently he said De Gea was dropped for making a mistake, which is fine and true, but I can't remember many precedents for Fergie being quite so open about why he's dropped a player. He's normally incredibly protective.
Yeah, like Paolo Di Canio, for example. Are United... Are they a better place to challenge City this year?
Yeah, probably. If it depends on if key players stay fit, Vidic being the obvious example.
Right.
I think what might help them is, I don't know how well Ferguson has got more experience than Mancini at managing twin campaigns, so Europe and the league, if it goes to March, which he'd expected to, despite City's tough draw. I think that that might be in United's favour.
All right, we'll talk more about said tough draw in a bit. Meantime, what do we make of Saints? They've looked spirited and worthy of some reward from their two games with the Manchester clubs, but a bit dismal at home to Wigan.
Yeah, but they could take a lot out of the two games against City and United. I think the fear is that they'll concede too many goals, simply because they weren't rock solid at the back last year either. But I don't know. I think they won't. There's no danger of them being cast adrift or anything like that. I think
really?
They'll be in.
Lots of people seem to be tipping them for all sorts of trouble this year.
Yeah, I don't think they'll cruise into mid table or anything. But I can't see them sort of being rock bottom all year. You know, I think they're one of seven or eight teams that are going to struggle. But
it shows how tight the margins are. But for a deflection on Ferdinand's header, we're probably sat here talking about a great Southampton victory.
Well, right.
Yeah. But they're a really interesting fusion of styles. Actually, it's the first time I've seen them yesterday. On the one hand, you've got Davis kicking the ball out. And on the other, they're not afraid to kind of lump it towards Lambert and take advantage of Raphael in yesterday's case. Quite interesting to see a team mix styles in that way.
Well, you wait till they get Alessandro Piero in there. Because the diminutive former Juve star apparently now weighing... It's either them or a move to the Australian.
Could, in all seriousness, should Liverpool not be looking at him?
Well, I know
he's
not
centre-forward, but he could still do it. He can still play off Suarez or off someone.
Why not, eh? Why not?
I prefer him to Michael Owen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, one other thing, Jonathan. What about the Zambian dude they signed? Mayuka. How was he at the Cup of Nations when he was top scorer?
He was joint top scorer. He won the Golden Boot because of an assist. But
technically, I'm right, though.
Yeah, there was seven players who were joint top scorer.
Okay.
But no, you are technically right. No, he was integral to the way Zambia played, which was to get the ball forward quickly. He held the ball up. His movement was very good. He's very good at bringing other players into the game. And, you know, he seemed to be able to finish. So. Right. I think he's probably in some ways the best player on that Zambian side. I mean, he was the only one playing in a European top flight when they won it.
Right.
I think he's a decent signing. Yeah, I think actually probably a better signing than Gaston Ramirez, who I think is, while incredibly skillful, also incredibly flaky. And I can imagine if, you know, come November, December, if they have three or four bad results in a row, I can imagine his head dropping.
Oh, right.
I also think Kelvin Davis is. I mean, I speak purely from a point of view, having seen him being hopeless for Sunderland, where he and Gary Breen basically seem to be auditioning for a sitcom of some kind of couple who didn't get on. I see sufficient errors from Kelvin Davis alone to relegate Sunderland.
Right. Okay, then, well, that's where we'll finish part one. Still to come, loads more from the Premier League and, Europe too. In other Premier League news, Man City beat QPR 3-1. And Swansea and Everton, they both blew their chance to go top of the table on Saturday. Swansea drawing 2-2 with your Black Cats. They're looking good, no? Are they not?
Are you Swansea or Sunderland?
Well, Sunderland. Swansea not so much with, Taylor, unfortunately, out now for some time.
Yeah, that's a horrible injury, wasn't it? Just one of those things where he landed badly and weight was in the wrong place. And
that could be the season, though. An ankle is notoriously difficult to come back from.
Injuries as bad as that, you kind of fear...
Broken in three places.
Yeah, how long it'll go on for. Yeah, I mean, just psychologically as much as anything else.
Yeah.
And he looked really good in the Olympics, I think.
Yeah.
Really, you know, top player. Would have been a Wales regular.
Right.
Very sad for him.
Yeah. And Chico Flores, of course, will be missing some games now after his red card.
Yeah, that was very odd, that. I mean, he was just very late in stretching for a ball that really shouldn't have been going for when Sarr's head was as close.
It had been coming, had it not?
Well, I think there had been a couple of meaty challenges earlier on that Martinelli had been upset about. But the great thing about that was Sarr's reaction. He half stopped and then was sort of, hang on, somebody should kick me in the head. And then fell over, almost if you had to think, what do I do when I get kicked in the head?
All right.
I don't think there was much contact there, but you can't go lunging in with your foot 6 feet up.
Clearly. Good point anyway for Sunderland.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, slightly awkward start of the season with the Reading game being called off because of the rain.
Yeah.
But, yeah, two away draws at Arsenal and Swansea.
Yeah. You're a fan of the Fletch?
I am now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think 12 million is possibly overpriced, but...
Yeah, if you got it, flaunt it. And Adam Johnson, he was busy, wasn't he?
Yeah, and looked very good against Morecambe in the League Cup as well. Ooh. So, yeah. I mean, that's obviously the real test of the player.
Right, OK. I mentioned Everton as well, who lost to a West Brom side, who are now off to their best start to a top five campaign since 1978. They're up in third place. James Farnhill, who said last week a cynic might expect Fellaini, it was Barry, of course, to have a dip in form now the transfer window is shut. Yeah, curious that, wasn't it? I mean, he wasn't the only one, but he certainly wasn't playing at anything like the same level.
No, he dropped off, and it was much more like the what you expect from Everton early on in the season. Flattering to deceive. But what a fantastic job that Steve Clark's done.
Amazing.
The Hawthorns, yeah. The worry for them is if they lose the technical and sporting director, Dan Ashworth, who is apparently the FA's first choice for their technical director role at St George's Park, and he's done a lot of good work at the Hawthorns.
Well, what does he do? Does he scout players? Does he bring players in?
Yeah, he's responsible for that and for bringing in the youth team players and that sort of stuff. Kind of the overall, a bit like a director of football role, really.
Right,
the same name.
All right. When will the FA decide on that?
Imminently, I think, now the transfer window's closed. Right. I think it's his to turn down.
Right.
Basically.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Now, what about Andy Carroll then? We mentioned Liverpool's problems without a big man up front, and what a great fit he's proving to be at Upton Park. Did anyone see this game?
Yes. Sam Allardyce, we all kind of dream of meeting the one, and Sam Allardyce has waited all his life for Andy Carroll, hasn't he?
Has he not had him before at Newcastle?
Yeah, but he was young. He was a young foal then. Right. Now he's a fully fledged beast.
Now he's just legal age.
It's just and actually West Ham, Jacob would point out quite furiously, Jacob Stubby, I did play some good stuff on Saturday as well, but that's just perfect for Allardyce. Carroll, when he's good, I know we laugh at him a lot, and often with good reason, but when he's at his best, he's pretty much unplayable.
Right.
And the first half on Saturday, he was close to that, I would say.
Extraordinary, wasn't it? He didn't actually score or provide an assist, but just his presence seemed to inspire his teammates and scare the bejesus out of the visiting cottages.
Yeah. The first goal was his knockdown to Vaste, then had the assist, so he was involved.
He did,
directly.
He just put the wind. They were just terrified of him, they were distracted by him. And who wouldn't be?
Well, indeed. Here come the hammers. But here comes the hamstring as well. Because he's gone out and he won't play for England. How long is that going to be then, do you think, John?
Well, they said a few weeks at first, but aren't there some concerns that it's going to be even longer?
Oh, are there?
I think so. I think that's what I heard.
All right, then. Okay, well, best wishes to Andy Carroll on his hamstring.
So on the subject of Carroll in England, he is actually a figure who weirdly gives me hope England might do something positive in the next 4 to 6 years.
Explain yourself.
Sorry?
Explain yourself.
Well, if you have him, he offers such an unusual and unique threat. I mean, there's very few players like him. And if you get him absolutely on top form, as you say, Rob, he is unplayable. How do you defend against him?
I can't remember.
It's a bit like, do you remember when Emil Heskey destroyed Nessa Sensini?
Yes.
And Sensini kind of aged about 15 years and in about half an hour and had to be taken off in a friendly. Now, Heskey obviously was not able to reproduce that on a regular basis, but Carroll is capable of that sort of performance, and he could really terrify defenders who aren't used to that type of football. I'm not suggesting he should start every game for England, but he's such a useful option. And I think when you combine that with the extreme pace of, say, Walcott, although I don't think Walcott's a particularly great player, but that pace is such an asset that, all right, they're playing the big lumbering defender, put Walcott against him. They're playing the little nippy defender, put Carroll against him. England just have these people at the extremes of various spectrums that actually could really rattle sides.
Right.
It's a very negative, patchy way of playing football or looking at football, but international football is negative and patchy, so it's a positive.
Well, there you go.
We need Spain to collapse, obviously, but...
No, not necessarily.
Oh, yes, necessarily.
Okay, necessarily. Who's England's World Cup qualifier against?
Moldova. Kishinev.
Right. Super stuff. You mentioned Emil Heskey. He's actually still available on a free Liverpool, if you're listening.
He's older than he used to be, I believe.
But you could have the Heskey-Owen dream team.
What are Sean Dundee and Eric Meyer doing?
I don't know, but I can also confirm, in answer to an earlier question, that Robbie Fowler is looking for a deal. So there you go. Glory days could be back at Anfield. Meantime, elsewhere in London, Andre Villas-Boas was the headline in one paper on Sunday morning after yet another disappointment for Spurs, this time at home to Norwich, 1-1. Oh, they've got problems at the back, haven't they, Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty chaotic. I think, again, you've seen a bit of an issue with Villas-Boas' preference for playing a high line and then trying to do it with William Gallas, who's too old and too slow to do that. And really, Friedel made, you know, four or five outstanding saves. Otherwise, Norwich would have won quite comfortably.
Mm, we're only three games in, but things already seem to take a rather nasty...
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the encouraging thing for Spurs fans would be, Veerspoels afterwards was very impressive in the press conference. He was very calm. He sort of almost welcomed extra questions at the end. You know, the press office was trying to shuffle him out, and he was, no, I want to take this question. He clearly thinks he's still in control. He clearly still is confident things are going well. He's not hiding. And I guess if he can transmit that confidence...
He was kind of like that in the early games at Chelsea, wasn't he, as well, before he started going
quickly
all weird.
Went weird, though.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't hit weird stage yet.
Right. OK, keep a watch on that one. Villa, in not rubbish news... with a draw away to Newcastle. Newcastle looking a bit flat, but a great goal from Hatem Ben Arfa.
Yeah, it was a screamer.
Screamer.
It was he thraked it.
Almost as good as Kandreva's for Lazio.
I didn't see that one. But Ben Arfa's was brilliant, although the defending wasn't fantastic on the goal. But Villa were great. I mean, you look at the Villa team sheet, and you just think, God, blimey, where, you know, how on earth are they going to even stay up? But they were really, really good and might well have won, actually.
Had it not been for Hatem's
bomb.
Cool. Now,
sorry, just on Newcastle.
Yep.
I saw them at Chelsea and they were really poor that day. I thought they were a little bit lucky to get the win against Spurs. So I wonder if, you know, there's going to be a bit of a regression to the mean this season.
Well, Alan Bartley is saying heads have been turned during the summer.
Well, yeah, and I think... Newcastle fans should pay close attention to the African Cup of Nations qualifier at the weekend between Ivory Coast and Senegal, because they really don't want Senegal to win that.
Right.
Because if they lose Bar and Cissé, then, yeah, I think there's big problems there.
Right, but isn't Tioté Ivory Coast?
Yeah, but they can replace Tioté, I think, much more comfortably than replace Bar and Cissé.
Yeah, that would be an issue. Wow, eh? And it's all coming up. When's it, the Cup of Nations?
January 19th, I think it starts. But it's, we're down to the because of the, there's only a year between tournaments, you've got this bizarre qualifying thing where it's now 15 knockout ties, two legs, one leg coming up at the weekend and the next one in October. And it's Ivory Coast, Senegal, head-to-head. Whoever wins goes through. Whoever loses, out.
Right, OK. There you go, Newcastle fans. Chelsea, of course, weren't in action in the Premier League this weekend because they were in the Super Cup. How did that work out for them? Everyone's having a titter at Chelsea's expense. That's not fair.
Well,
is
no,
it?
I mean, laughing at just how utterly, utterly awful they were.
Right.
I mean, I think it's one of those games where you almost take, if you were a Chelsea fan, you'd take comfort from how awful they were and just think that was one of those things.
It can't be
nobody
that.
Turned up.
Right. Is that what it was, do you think? Or Falcao absolutely tore them?
Falcao was absolutely brilliant. That is true. And I think also there were some defensive issues in the game against Reading. And I think possibly those, although Chelsea was subsequently very, very good in beating Newcastle, I think those defensive issues possibly haven't been fully resolved. If you have a very fluent three in a 4-2-3-1, it can leave your fullbacks exposed. I mean, and the thing was that Atletico, again and again, there were players just running through on an unprotected back four, which suggests issues at the back of the midfield. I think the shape of that isn't quite working yet. People high up the pitch aren't picking up runners, and that's causing them to get overmanned.
Right. Falcao, who was a Chelsea target for much of the... Or supposedly.
Bewildering he's still there. I mean, he's obviously a really, really good player. I don't understand how they managed to hold... I mean, well done to Atletico for hanging on to him. But
Only Messi and Ronaldo scored more than him last year in the Liga.
Didn't Adrian Charles describe him as a 26-year-old and double UEFA Cup-winning Falcao as a great prospect?
Well,
during that
certainly
ITV's,
is.
Commentary.
We don't know much about him, but he looks a great prospect. Marvellous. All right. That wasn't the only mess in Monaco. According to you, Jonathan Wilson, you slammed the Champions League draw on Friday. Tell us why.
I suggested the seedings are a bit odd.
Well, they are a bit odd, aren't they? Why?
Well, you could have had a situation where... In fact, we almost do have a situation where the champions of England, the champions of Spain, the champions of Italy and the champions of Germany were all in the same group because they were in different seeding pots. And it's all done on UEFA coefficients, but I think they have to manipulate that slightly because if you're the champions of Germany, 2 years in a row, Borussia Dortmund have won it,
and they were
still
ranked
in pot
below.
Four.
Yeah, they were ranked below Celtic, Metalist Kharkiv, Anderlecht, FC Copenhagen, Fulham, and Getafe,
and Braga are in pot two. I mean, Braga.
Right. Well, what it meant was we get one group that looks really, really, really tough.
United's group.
It's Man United's group. They've got Galatasaray, Cluj and Braga. Braga out of pot two. That's not going to be easy.
I don't know what I'm laughing at after last year.
Right. No, that's fair, actually, to be... Yeah, what else we got? Real, Man City, Ajax and Borussia Dortmund. That's the toughie.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant group. I guess that's what the Champions League should be about. But, you know, champions playing each other. But probably not at this stage.
Well,
I mean, if Braga get three, Jesus Christ.
But isn't Braga's rating weighted because of that UEFA League final they were in? So that's kind of...
Well, it's partly that. It's partly they had the good fortune to lose to Porto in it. So Porto got loads of coefficient points. And so you'd jointly your own points and the country's coefficient points.
I know it's not particularly fair on City, but it's great to have a group of death, isn't it? We always moan about... Champions League groups being too easy.
Yeah.
I think one year they should just fix it somehow so they just have a group of death every year. I remember in 1989 you had United, Bayern, Barcelona and Bromby and only one team were guaranteed to go through. That's a group of death.
And that produced brilliant, brilliant football.
Yeah, 2-3-alls, a 2-all and so on. In the end, two went through because of second place, but that wasn't guaranteed.
Cool. Other Champions League groups, you've probably seen these. Barcelona, Benfica, Celtic and Spartak, Arsenal, Montpellier, Olympiacos and Schalke. Gunners would probably be all right about that, wouldn't they? Milan, who are by consensus... Well, we'll talk more about them in a second, but it's not the Milan of old. That much is clear. Anderlecht and Malaga and Zenit St. Petersburg. Chelsea's group has Juventus, Shakhtar and Nordsjælland.
Yeah, I think that's quite an interesting group. Mm. I mean, Nordsjælland clearly a kind of... Yeah, they'll do well to pick up a point. But the other three sides, I think... Yeah, we've all got a decent chance of going.
Do you know where they're from, Jonathan?
Yeah, Northern Jutland, that's what
it
means.
There you go. Oh, that's what it means. Okay, good.
Will Shakhtar do enough away from home to threaten?
Possibly not. I mean, that's been the big question mark over Shakhtar is that they haven't quite... I mean, I know they won the UEFA Cup in 2009, was it?
John, where's Northern Jutland?
Denmark.
It's that bit that sticks out the top of Germany.
Right.
That's Denmark.
Denmark, yeah. That's where we get the word to jump from. Bayern have got Bati Borisov. Lille and Valencia. There you go. I'm glad I read through those. Well, Jonathan here wasn't the only top footballing figure left unhappy by events in Monte Carlo. There was also the sight of Cristiano Ronaldo unleashing a full-scale pout after Iniesta picked up some... Euro bauble for Euro player of the season type thing. And has that had consequences? Was that the reason for his post-game sulk after the Granada victory? For that and more, let's now dial up Sid Lowe in Spain. Sid, ahoy!
Hello, James. How are you?
Hola!
By the way, that ahoy, does that mean you're no longer circling near Earth orbit? You're now on a boat?
We are on a boat.
It's no longer a pod, it's more a... ferry.
Yeah, we're in the North Sea, just outside.
So when Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he envisaged people answering it, ahoy, ahoy.
Did he?
Yeah, I assume that was what you were referring to, but...
No. Monty Burns in The Simpsons still does.
Yeah, no, that's why, yeah.
Let's talk about Ronaldo. What's going on?
Well, you asked the question there, was that something to do with it, Andres Iniesta winning the UEFA Player of the Year, European Player of the Year award, and Cristiano Ronaldo was asked that directly, and he said no. There are more important things than that, and I think he's probably right. Let's talk about the options, but perhaps it's best to set the scene, isn't it? So Ronaldo scores twice last night, doesn't celebrate, comes into the mix zone at the Bernabeu and says, he's asked why he didn't celebrate, and said, well, maybe I'm not very happy. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm a bit sad. Now, sad in Spanish doesn't sound quite as, well, sad as it does in English. It just means, maybe I'm a bit unhappy. And he's asked why, and he said, I don't really want to talk about that. And he says, well, is it professional or personal? He said, professional. He said, well, why are you unhappy? Don't want to talk about it. Do people know why you're unhappy, the people who matter? And he said, the people at the club know. So he's talking about something to do with the club. Now, this feels to me like a player who has been trying to get a new contract out of the club at a time when three or four other players have renewed deals, hasn't yet been put in, you know, put at the negotiating table, hasn't yet spoken to the club. The club is presumably saying, because there's been no progress on this, okay, we'll deal with it. And I suspect this is a financial problem, and I suspect that's why it was couched in terms of, or at least according to some of the reports that have come out, couched in terms of not feeling valued. And I hate to be cynical, but this feels like that classic case of Rivaldo and one or two other Brazilian players who've done this in Spain as well, saying they don't feel the cariño, they don't feel the warmth and the affection of their clubs, and it's affection that comes in the shape of dollar bills.
Sid, one other thing, sorry. What was the view from Marca and AS, etc., about Real Madrid's group of extreme death in the Champions League draw?
extreme bit. Well, look, I'll tell you what how it felt to me. It felt to me like it's about time there was a group that was worth watching at the Bernabeu. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we've seen so many Champions League groups that have been almost irrelevant, and this feels like a big one at last. So the reaction, so that I think that colours the reaction a little bit, because you see the reaction and it is one of, wow, this is a tough group. This is genuinely hard for Real Madrid. This is potentially problematic. But I also think there was a certain degree of excitement of saying, well, brilliant, we're going to see some really good games. We're going to see some properly good teams here. And by the way, did you see that Mourinho went to watch Manchester City and turned up in a very Manchester City-esque light blue outfit? Mm. I wonder, was he trying to make a point? But at the same time, I don't think there's too much doubt here that Real Madrid is still the strongest team in that group and that Real Madrid should come through it. Perhaps in a way, the greatest concern with it is simply the fact that Real Madrid will have to play hard, almost certainly full six games, or at least for four of them, because I'm not sure that Ajax will be as difficult for them.
Thanks, Sid. Ooh. That's it for part two. We've still got Football League stuff and a rip-roaring Serie A roundup after this. Very excitingly, news just in is that LeBron James, top Liverpool investor, has offered an incentive for the Reds to win some silverware. If they do get a trophy or a title this year, he will throw them a party in Las Vegas with his top celebrity chums, Kanye West and Jay-Z.
Will this be the first step towards a duet between Kanye West and Jay Spearing?
I don't know, but I do know that the DJ at that party better be pretty careful about what music he puts on. Otherwise it could all get very, very nasty. That party that's clearly really going to happen. Anyway.
Well, they won silverware last season.
That's true. Sorry, John, you're absolutely right. Would the League Cup count? We'll just check that with LeBron James. Right, OK. Wow, that's exciting, isn't it? Swindon. Hey, Swindon! Tell us about Swindon. What's been happening there?
Well, what was happening yesterday against Preston was Paolo Di Canio and his goalkeeper, Wes Fotheringham, yep, falling out rather badly.
Set the scene for us, John.
Well, 22 minutes in, Swindon have just fallen two behind. The first, certainly, a goalkeeping error. And so Di Canio changes goalkeepers.
Yeah.
Brings off Fotheringham.
In fairly humiliating fashion.
Yeah, like he was beckoning with his hands.
Like a naughty school child. Yeah.
Had a bit of a go at him as he walked past, and Fotheringham belted a water bottle as he marched off towards the tunnel.
Turns around and screams at Di Canio as well.
Yeah, look furious. And then Di Canio afterwards was clearly not pulling any punches.
He was one of the worst players I've ever seen in a football match. He was the crappy player even against Stoke. He basically said that we carried him against Stoke because they had that amazing League Cup win. What was it, 4-3?
4-3, yeah.
He said basically we covered for him. He had a terrible game. If he doesn't come out and say sorry to the fans for the professionalism in general, he's out from my team. He was nothing until the day he joined me. Not the club, but me. He didn't have 1 second as a professional. Nobody wanted him because he's 181 centimetres. In English football, everybody want 199, like the effing Preston goalkeeper. He's still 20. He thinks he's untouchable. He went on and on like this.
Just a couple of things. The best bit was the huge roar when he booted the water bottle from the Preston fans. It was as big as a goal.
This was Fotheringham, not...
Yeah, because you could see him march towards it and he just moves onto the field. Another thing, we were talking earlier about kind of humiliating early substitutions. And apparently once at Cambridge, Steve Claridge took the ball down, neatly moved in field and passed the ball. That wasn't good enough. John Beck pulled him off because the instructions had been strictly to kind of basically knock it to corners. Took him off after 10 minutes and apparently had a fight at half time and settled it in the old style.
Well, it's quite fascinating, Di Canio calling out a player for his angry reaction because, secondly, Fotheringham had actually gone 1,000 minutes without conceding before the Stoke goal, so...
Yeah, he was a huge player for them last season. But Di Canio's got this as a history of in his brief managerial career at Swindon. He appointed Oliver Rissa as captain at the start of last season. 3 months later, he was replaced by Alan Caddis as captain, who has just been stripped of the captaincy this season. There was Leon Clark, who he fell out with.
Was that the one who he grabbed by the throat down the tunnel?
Yeah, that was the big fight. Mind you, Leon Clark, a lot of people could fall out with him.
Another player as he came off. Remember, towards the end of last season, he gave him a kick up the bum.
This is when they're on the way to the championship as well. In April, he sort of said that he had a big rant about the drinking culture in the game and said that players should be hugging their babies rather than going out and drinking. And said he thought about resigning back in February. Mm. I mean, it all works perfectly. You know, everybody will be reasonably happy as long as they keep winning. Mm. because you can kind of like have this madcap style as long as you get results, but it's when things start going wrong that you'll have to start to worry.
So he actually blamed his goalkeeper for being 1.81 metres tall.
He said that nobody else wanted him.
Wait, how tall is he, Casillas? Because I reckon he's about 1.81.
Right.
So is this well, kind of really saying that if Casillas is offered a free transfer, yeah, he'd turn him down for being too short?
It's was making up as he went along.
No, it's well worth catching on YouTube because, yeah, he delivered it a lot better than I did. A 4-1 defeat for them at Deepdale, anyone?
Yeah, they've had a decent start to the season, though. Hmm. So there's no real need to right. for this sort of thing to happen. Really.
Well, he called him arrogant and unprofessional, is that right?
Mm. Arrogant, unprofessional, ignorant in a way. Not as a person, as an athlete.
All right. In other League One news, Tranmere are top of the division with 10 points. Not far behind them, John Ashdown's Blades. Ooh, a big 5-3 win against Bournemouth at the weekend.
Yeah, take that, Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, in front of the... I'm not going to mention it. I don't want to mention it because it's too embarrassing. The Jess Ennis stand...
Right.
Is it Brian
Are you not
Dean
proud
stand,
of...
No, there's no Brian Dean stand or Tony
No,
Curry
it's just at the Don Valley Stadium. Maybe it's kind of a reconciliatory gesture.
Yeah, so basically United have named a stand after Jessica Ennis.
Yeah, it's the Bramall Lane end, which is the away stand.
Right. What was it previously called?
It was just called the Bramall Lane. Well, people just call it the Bramall Lane end. All of them have sponsors, but it's all, they're always right. named after, you know.
She's not sponsoring it or anything?
No, she's it's in her honour.
Okay.
She's, I mean, she's not... I mean, her family are big Sheffield United fans, but I don't right. think she's particularly bothered.
Right. Obviously, so. This is nothing against Jessica Ennis. She's
no, but,
and all that.
We were, but we were saying earlier in the office, like, is it the first time ever a club has named a stand after a non-footballing sports person? We couldn't think of anybody else, I don't think. So it's... It's just rubbish and small time, isn't it? And a bit... It's like trying to get a bit of the glory when you're a League One side. I don't know. It's not very edifying, I don't think.
All right. Championship. Oh, Blackpool. Top with 9 points from 4 games. They lost at the weekend at Leicester. Thomas Ince has been doing well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't. He was sort of sporadic against the Foxes at the weekend.
Right.
I tell you who has been playing well, Gary Taylor-Fletcher.
All right, then.
Who I think he's brilliant. I call him the Pub Cantona because he's just a big. He looks like a player who should be playing on the Sunday League, but you know some of his touches are just absolutely brilliant.
He's right,
really, really good.
Big spending Blackburn are right behind the Tangerines, though.
Yeah, they had a 3-3 draw with Leeds at the weekend, for whom El Hadj Diouf opened his account.
Ooh.
At Blackburn, I think they spent $8 million on Jordan Rose, or a fee yeah. rising to $8 million last week. There's absolutely no...
They spent $20 million over the summer.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
Why didn't they do that last season and try and stay up?
Well, I mean, they'd run out of time, I suppose, towards the end yeah. of the season. But I just think it's... Parachute payments aren't designed... You know, they're getting the full parachute payments, the same as Wolves, Bolton and all the other teams that have come down over the years. And I just don't think that... You know, they're designed to protect clubs from doing this, basically, from putting themselves in financial difficulties. I'm not saying that Blackburn are. I'm saying that... You know, so there's something not right when you're being given loads of money by the league and that you then go and spend $8 million on a player. I just think it's something...
basically, if you leave a job and you get all your pension payment given to you, instead of reinvesting it, it's just like going on a 54-day bender, basically, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, because with these players, they might hope to avoid the financial implications. Yeah,
it's so risky, though, as we've seen so many times. Such a big risk.
Right.
They've got a squad that they've got no excuse, really, not finishing in that top two, I think.
Right. And Steve Keane's still the manager, yes?
Yeah.
Good, right. Nottingham Forest are in third place, I think. Hey, how are Gianfranco Zola's Watford doing?
They got hammered at the weekend.
5-1 at Derby. Ooh. It's not going well for poor Gianfranco, is it?
No, it's not, but it's you look at that team and just, you know, all the loan players. They've got, I think, something like, they're looking at double figures now for
loan players. Yeah.
Which is no way to, well, to my mind, is no way to construct a successful side. But, you know, it was
all 10 apparently have come in from Udinese, which means basically they've come in from the furthest flung corners of the globe.
Yeah, so, and these are guys who aren't good enough to be playing for the Udinese first team, as we have to assume, don't we, I guess?
Well, probably. Or Granada.
Mm.
Mm. I think Watford are third tier in this arrangement, is that right? Is that your understanding, Jonathan?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you're right, just kind of how would... Why would loan players have any attachment to the club? I know that in theory they're playing to kind of move up that Udinese pyramid, but I think it's, you know, it appears such a distant thing, and there's so many possible excuses. And you know, you get called into the Udinese management. Why were you rubbish? Well, you know, Gianfranco doesn't understand me, blah, blah. There's so many possible ways out of that. I just think it's a very, very bad thing. I mean, I wrote a piece last year, the year before, saying that I looked at the Sunderland side and none of the players there have been more than 3 years. I think Kieran Richardson was the longest serving player. And you kind of think, well, how can fans ever have affection for those players? They're very obviously mercenaries, so you just kind of... not their fault, it's just the way the game is. That they go to where the next contract is and it becomes very difficult, I think, to have that same emotional bond. And I don't know how Watford fans can ever have an emotional bond with a player who, as soon as he plays well, they know he's going straight back to his father club, mother club,
all the benefits,
parent club.
All the benefits seem to be on Udinese's end. And if you look at the history of the Championship, so many teams that go down, that drop into League One, have had a history of loan players season.
Doncaster last season had real problems when they brought in all their loan players, didn't they?
So. Well, Sheffield United last season were built on loans, basically short-term loans, and it didn't work. The mood around a club changes because, as you say, you don't get no connection.
I mean, two or three is fine, but more than that, I think you really create a problem.
Mm. Well, there you go. Speaking of Udinese, father, mother, parent club. There in Friuli didn't have a particularly good weekend. They lost 4-1 at home to Juventus. Some controversy over the opening goal, which was a penalty, which also saw their goalkeeper Burkic, giant man, sent off. I think his height may have been something of an issue. I'm not sure where he stands on the Di Canio scale, but he's a really big fella, and he went up against probably the smallest man in football, Jovinko, and Jovinko naturally sort of fell over. He sort of knocked him over with his knee, pretty much, and the ref came in and waved red cards and stuff. And I think that the disparity of heights may have... gave a penalty, and then it was all Juve after that. And they are top of the table with Napoli and Lazio, all three of them on maximum points. And Lazio in Tottenham's group, of course.
Yeah, I mean, of the Europa League groups, that was the sort of fixture that immediately stood out for the English sides.
Be interesting to see how this Lazio side shapes up. So far, so good anyway. Milan had a terrific win, 3-1 against Bologna. All three goals from Pazzini, who everyone regarded as being the kind of surplus baggage in the Pazzini-Cassano swap. But my word, he got a hat-trick for Milan away to Bologna. So well done to him. And immediately went straight back into the Italian national team, taking Cassano's place. Cassano, meanwhile, was in action in the big Sunday night game, which was Inter-Roma. Much excitement about this. Firstly, because if Juve had the team to beat, the impression was that whoever came out best of Inter and Roma would be the team to challenge them. But also because it was a return of Zdeněk Zeman to British TV screens. First time in, I don't know, a decade or something like that, or more, Jonathan. Did you catch this?
It was brilliant, yeah.
Are you a disciple of Zemanlandia?
I think he... Well, yes. I mean, I'd hate to see him in charge of my club, but I love watching him.
Yeah.
I love watching his season. He's interviewed, actually, in the issue of The Blizzard, which came out today.
Ooh. What's he say? Not very much?
What's The Blizzard?
No, he slags off Modgi, unsurprisingly.
Right.
He talks generally about his philosophy and about the 4-3-3 and about how he wants his team also to be fitter than other teams, and how, I think, was it his uncle? Chestermere?
Chestermere Palik.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who sort of instilled in him these beliefs. It's an interesting interview, yeah. So
on the subject of Modgi, because, of course, it was his battle and his forthright comments on Juve and the way that they won, doping and other issues as well, that saw him pretty much excluded from the top flight in Italy. I don't think there's any coincidence that he really struggled to find work after calling out Modgi and co on certain things. Inter's fans actually held up a banner for him at the San Siro yesterday saying, honour to Zeman, he is an icon of clean football.
Just a quick one. Are his Foggia team remembered as fondly in Italy as they are in my head?
Oh, yeah.
Mind?
I think so, yeah. What team that was, though? Little Beppe Signori.
Shalimov, Bayano.
Rambaldi. Rambaldi, yeah. Delano.
Petrescu as well, I think.
I think he was there.
The coolest Italian team ever.
Were they?
I think they
Mad were. Town, Foggia. Mad. And, yes. Anyway, I think pretty much any Zeman team is remembered fondly. Even by... It's funny, though, because you say I wouldn't want him in charge of my team, but the Roma fans were delighted to see him back. And I think as well, he's mellowed a bit over the years, hasn't he? Last night's Roma side was nowhere near us, even though when they were 2-1 up, they were still pressing for another. They also seemed to be a little bit more restrained in their mad bombing forwardness. And the victory that came without, you know, their first choice midfield. So Roma possibly looking good this year. And what would be really interesting, after the whole kind of backstory of Zeman and Juventus, would be if he was be the one, you know, if his Roma would did actually take the title challenge to them. And that, with a wake up Tracy Moore, the Serie A roundup's over, is it for today's Football Weekly. Many thanks, John Ashdown. Jonathan, good luck with all your many multimedia engagements.
Thank you very much.
And pigeons and anything else that happens to cross your path. Thanks, Rob, for coming in today. See be gentle, listeners, be gentle.
See you next season.
See you next season. Producer Ben, shadowy mastermind, and you, the listener, we'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
Guardian Holiday Offers is pleased to bring you a great selection of worldwide trips from our trusted partners. From cultural tours and adventure holidays to river cruises and cottage breaks, we have something for everyone. To find your perfect break, go to guardian.co.uk/travel with us. That's guardian.co.uk/travel with us.